Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Breaking Blindness Barriers group meeting for May 31st, 2025. This is our second meeting of the year. And my name is Julian Vargas, and my website is www.techjv.com. And there you can find my email address and phone number if you want to get a hold of me for any reason. I want to thank the Audio Internet Radio. Internet Radio Reading Service of Los Angeles, AIRS LA, for turning our meetings into podcasts because this allows us to share this information with not only the participants that are here and want to review it or the ones that couldn't show, but it also makes it available to anybody anywhere in the world who stumbles across us and can benefit from it. Just a little reminder, meetings and participation listening are, of course, free. But there are costs involved in making this happen, so I accept donations via my website, www.techjv.com, as well as AIRS LA. They are a nonprofit as well, and they accept donations. So if you appreciate any of the work that any of us are doing here to make this possible, and you have a few cents here and there that you don't mind doing something positive with, we will gladly accept those as donation to help offset operating costs. So at this point, this is where we go to announcements, and these are things that are generally of interest to the blind, low vision community here in LA, as well as Southwest Florida, the two places I spend a lot of time in, and who I make this meeting available to.
This is
So,
Andy.
so what I ask is, I'll give the announce. I'll open the floor here momentarily. I have a few things to add, but I got you in queue there, Andy. Okay, so WWDC, we all know what that is. Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference keynote presentation is coming up very soon, just around the corner. This is going to be on June the 9th. So keep that date in mind. Some of us like to watch the thing live or choose to catch it later in a podcast or news form. But this is an important thing to keep track of because this is usually where the new operating systems are announced. And all kinds of good information is given. One rumor that I've heard, and we'll have to see if this bears out, is that Apple may be renaming all their operating systems. They may be changing the naming scheme. So possibly iOS 26 instead of iOS 19, or maybe iOS 2026. They're trying to make it less confusing, the rumor says. So we'll see what happens. I'll point out that I kind of laughed at the idea of the iPhone 16e being the 16e because I thought for sure they were going to stick with SE something, but that rumor turned out to be true, so we'll see what happens. For those who use the Meta glasses or are interested or following developments on the Meta smart glasses, some cool new features have just rolled out and are starting to be found by other people. It's called Live AI and also Detailed Descriptions. Live AI is where you can have an ongoing live conversation with the AI, and it's a live video feed to it. So instead of calling its name and asking questions, you have a conversation with the AI, and it's watching your video from the camera. And detailed descriptions is something put in there specifically to be helpful to people who are blind and low vision. Some of us helped beta test this thing, and we're quite happy to have it roll out to everybody, where it just gives you better descriptions on things. If you enable this feature under accessibility in the settings menu for Meta AI, which is now the name of the app that you have running in the background to make the glasses work. Another interesting thing to note is if you are a user of Google's Nest thermostats, the first and second generation of them, they are going to be losing a support for communications with the internet. So, in other words, you're not going to be able to use your smart speakers or even an app to control them anymore. They'll still work in standalone form, but they're not, that's not the most accessible way. So, Google is offering up to $130 trade-in value toward the new Nest. So, if you have one of those and you like being able to use it remotely, it might pay to think about doing the trade-in. Another interesting thing, some of you have heard of the InnoSearch website. This is where you can do online shopping with a lot less clutter because it's made for those of us who are blind to low vision. But if you don't have access to doing it online or prefer not to use a computer or touchscreen device to do your shopping, they do now have a phone number that you can call. So you basically talk to this AI bot and do your shopping and your purchasing all on the phone. And the phone number for that is 855 Shop GPT. That's 855-746-7478. If you call that number and follow the prompts, you can do shopping with the help of an AI chatbot from your phone. So for some people, it might be easier. So before I go into the main program here, I know Andy said he had an announcement. So go ahead, Andy.
Okay, the Blind Information Technology Specialists, which is an affiliate of the American Council of the Blind, is going to be doing a deep dive into AI. This part of it is going, well, one aspect of it is going to be a 3-day intensive workshop at the ACB convention in Dallas. But because the session filled up so quickly and there was such an amount of interest in it, they have decided to do a virtual package. And this would be available to the in-person session was only available to BITS members, but the virtual package will be available to anyone, whether they're a BITS member or not. Of course, if you're not a BITS member, the registration fee will include a 1-year membership to BITS. But basically, what it will cover is you'll get all of the recordings of the in-person workshop. You will also get I don't know how they work this out, but you'll get temporary access to Leesy if you're a JAWS user. To Leesy, which is a service offered by Brian Hargin in England. And it's basically, for what I understand, it's a package of JAWS scripts that greatly enhance what you can do with JAWS and whatnot. And you'll get some temporary access to that. And you will also be enrolled in a closed email list that will only be composed of the instructors and the students who take the course. And you will also be, this is optional, but you'll also have access to 8 hours of one-on-one coaching, because part of it is that they would like people to come up with a project that they might like to do with AI. I know there's one person who says that he's involved in maintaining and updating a website, and he wants to use AI to perhaps enhance his abilities to do that. But if you have a project that you would like to do with AI, you would get this 8 hours of coaching in addition. And if you're a BITS member, the cost is $50. If you're not, the cost is $70. You have until June 15th to sign up, and you would go to www.joinbits, joinbits.org/join.
All right, that sounds like quite a comprehensive package there. So, if anybody has any questions about this, Andy, do you mind giving out contact info where people can reach you?
Okay, well, of course, if you go to that website, that'll give you all the information that you need about the course, the registration form, and whatnot. And that's basically, all I know about it. So if you go to that website, you would get basically everything that you need.
Okay, sounds good. So yeah, if you have any questions about this information that Andy gave, then please go to the website. Don't send me any emails because I don't have anything available other than what Andy just gave. So any questions or refer to that website that he gave, and hopefully that'll help people smash some barriers. Sounds good. Thanks for sharing that, Andy. Anybody else have any quick announcements here before we get going with the show? Alrighty, and before we get going, I hear sounds of paper rustling and movement and things like that. So again, I'm going to ask anybody at this point to please mute yourself. And if we do mute you, please stay muted. Don't keep unmuting yourself because it just makes it harder for us to run this meeting. And it makes it harder for the editors later to make this podcast happen. So when I'm going to open the floor, I will announce as such. And then if you want to speak, you can go ahead and unmute. So moving on, we will get to one of the two topics that we are going to discuss today, which is the iPhone 16e from Apple. And I'm still hearing voices. Mary Lou, could you please stay muted? It's your noises in the background are disrupting the meeting. And we're muting you for that reason. So please don't keep unmuting yourself. Thank you. All right. So the iPhone 16e, Apple's latest iPhone. This would be their basic iPhone. And I just want to point out that there are lots of good sources online and in the media for reviews, hardware, and all that stuff on these devices. If you want to get a more comprehensive breakdown of specs, I'm just kind of go through things here, and of course, with the from the perspective of a blind low vision user. So I recommend researching this online, YouTube, Google, whatever. And AppleViz.com is the place I recommend. They did an excellent review and breakdown on this phone. And again, from the perspective of helping blind and low vision users. So this is Apple's latest basic iPhone. I'll give you right the detail that everybody wants right up on top here. It starts at $200 less than their standard iPhone 16. So this can certainly make it more affordable to people who are on a fixed budget and maybe can't afford to put out the full amount of money that Apple wants for standard 16. This is Apple's way of addressing those people who want a new iPhone, who maybe don't have to have all the latest and greatest features, but just enough of the basic things to use a phone every day. You'll notice that Apple changed the naming scheme of this phone. They've done away with the SE line. That for years now has been their budget line of phones. This year they decided to bring the basic phone into the line, into the family of the current naming scheme. So a few things about this is that the iPhone 16e no longer has a home button or Touch ID. And I know that for some that can pose some difficulty, but unfortunately Apple has decided to leave the home button and the Touch ID in the rearview mirror now. It now uses Face ID, which I have to say has gotten a lot better in the last few years. When I first used Touch ID on the iPhone XR, it was okay. But it left some to be desired. And I have to say that ever since I've been using the 15 Pro, Face ID is a lot more reliable, a lot more rock solid. And the 16e is certainly no stranger to that. It works very nicely there. The look and feel of this phone is a few things. It's only available in black and white, so you don't get as many color variations as you do with the standard and the Pro models of the 16 family. It is similar in size to phones that basically from the 11 through 16 line of phones, except that it is slightly shorter and, of course, lighter in weight because it doesn't have all the things that are in the flagship phones. It has a 6.1-inch screen. So, again, if you're familiar with the iPhone 11 and beyond, the standard models of those phones all had 6.1-inch screens. It has a full edge-to-edge screen, or active screen, if you will. So no more chins and bezels, as they were known. And what that basically means is that with the iPhone SE and that design of phones, you had an area on the upper part of the screen and the lower part of the screen, especially where the home button was located, and of course on the right and left of the screen that were not active. It was glass, but it was not active. You can put your finger there and it wouldn't do anything. It wouldn't register any taps or swipes or anything because that was not active screen. And those areas are referred to as chins and bezels. It's just a cosmetic term, I guess. But since there's no more home button, there was no need to have that chin at the bottom of the phone. So now you get a full active screen, which means that yes, even though it's the same size as some of the other phones, you actually are getting a lot more screen as compared to what you were getting with the SE. The status bar is at the very top edge of the screen now. So again, it wasn't like this bit of glass that you went past before you would hit the status bar. And the same with the dock. It's at the bo very bottom edge now. So as soon as you get away from the frame of the phone, you are basically touching those areas. And they are receptive to touch. Another change with this line of phones is that it joins the 15 Pro and 16 line of phones in replacing the mute ring switch with something called the action button. So you can press and hold this button momentarily by default, and it toggles between muting the phone and vibration only, or the ringer sounding or the alerts playing. So it behaves like the switch used to, but it's not a physical switch. That's a button you press and hold. And when you press it momentarily, if you have voiceover on, it announces the state of that toggle. So if you press it, like if I press mine now, for example, it would say ring. So that's what it's set to. It's set to ring, where if it was set to vibrate and mute, it would say mute. The action button also has an added benefit in that it can be reprogrammed to trigger all kinds of shortcuts. And that's a whole other rabbit hole that one can go down. But there's a lot of shortcuts out there that one can download to their phone or create yourself using Apple's Shortcuts app. And you can have it triggered by the push of that action button. So if you don't care so much about muting and unmuting your ringer with that button, you can now actually use it for something else. Like some people use it to trigger the Be My Eyes app so that when they push it, it automatically comes on and they can start using Be My Eyes. The Lightning connector has now been replaced by USB-C ports, which again, this is Apple's trend and really the trend of the world. Is to move away from proprietary connectors like Lightning and go to universal connectors like USB-C. So now with the 16E, you have access to that as well. The speakers and the sound. It's got a very full, bassy sounding set of speakers. I'm actually very impressed with it. And the earpiece as well. So, like when you're listening to somebody on the phone call, it has a very nice, full, rich sound. At least I think so. Some say even that it's better than the 16 Pro Max. The 16 Pro Max has had some weird audio issues with the speakers, and I've read all kinds of stuff about that. And we're not sure why Apple hasn't fixed or replaced that, but that's not what you would expect from the Pro line of anything. And that's the top of the line, cream of the crop, Pro Max. But this 16E actually, in the opinion of some, has a better sound quality than that of the 16 Pro Max. Now let's talk about performance and specs. It has the A18 processor, just like all the other 16 phones. It does support Apple Intelligence. So I think this is one of the reasons why Apple did that this year with the 16 anything, is before they used to give the older, the previous year's model on the standard models and of course the SEs. But this year, the standard all the way through the Pro Max got the same processor, except that, yeah, the Pro and Pro Max did get theirs as an A18 Plus or something like that. So it does give it a little bit of a performance boost for the Pro features. But in general, you're getting the same processor. So whether you get the 16E or the 16 Pro Max, you've got the A18 processor. And truthfully, VoiceOver, which is what most of us really care about, is just the snappy on all the models, including the 16E. So there's no noticeable difference in VoiceOver performance between the 16E and the 16 Pro Max. The storage on this starts at 128 gigabytes, where you'll remember that all the SE models started at 64. So 128 now is the basic, the base storage for iPhones, and the 16e is definitely part of that. The battery life on this thing is awesome. In fact, some say it's really got the best battery life of any phone of a 6.1 inch screen. So, if you really care about battery life, this is one reason to look at this phone. Another change in specs is that Apple has decided to move away from the Qualcomm modems to their own modems that they're building, much like what they did with Apple Silicon when they started building it into all their stuff, their Macs and then their devices as well. So this is Apple's one more step that Apple takes into doing everything in-house and relying less on other companies to make their stuff. As far as how reliable it is, that remains to be seen. And for those who are curious, this is what allows your phone to connect to all wireless networks, such as 5G and things like that, your cellular wireless networks. This little device, this modem, is what controls all that. So it's so far, I've not read anything negative about it. It seems to be working, and Jamie here, my assistant, is using the 16E and has been quite happy with it. So good battery life, good connections to wireless networks. So we haven't noticed any big downside to it. But there, of course, there are some compromises because, again, this is not a Pro line, and it's not even a standard line. This is meant to be Apple's sort of lower end entry into smartphones or into iPhones for people. So, of course, to bring down that price by $200, like I mentioned earlier, they do have to cut some corners. They have to get rid of some things. So, for example, there is no MagSafe charging. So, if you are somebody who uses MagSafe, like you've been using the standard phones for a while, and you bought MagSafe chargers and things like that, the 16E doesn't support it. It doesn't mean that those chargers won't charge the phone. They will charge the phone. It just won't be as fast of a charge. And it the way the magnets work, it's not going to have that sort of precise, almost click when you put it in the right place to keep it from slipping. So those are things to just remember. No MagSafe, but it does support Qi charging, Qi charging. Some people call it Qi, some people call it Qi. So it will still work with your wireless chargers. It just won't be the MagSafe performance that you may have gotten used to. So if you like that, then that's something to keep in mind. There's also no ultra wideband chip, and this is something that enables precision finding of AirTags and AirPods. So if you are somebody who's been using that or were thinking that you might want to mess with that, this iPhone 16e will not have it. You can still locate your stuff with it, but it just won't be as precise as far as guiding you directly to the thing that you're looking for, the way that something that has the ultra wideband chip would do. The camera sensors are also less than what you find on the standard, and certainly the Pro models. So that's something to remember. But unless you're a serious photographer, and even then, I might say that that may not matter as much because you're still getting something pretty good with their cameras. It doesn't seem to negatively affect OCR and other apps that we as blind and low vision users rely on. Those things still work the same. Seeing AI works the same. Be My AI, all that stuff seems to work the same. And I haven't noticed any appreciable difference in performance between that and, say, what I get with my 15 Pro. Also, there's no dynamic island there in the upper center part of the top of the screen there. And quite frankly, I don't know that dynamic island has really taken off to be anything great for many people. I have it in my 15 Pro, and yeah, I guess when I order an Uber, I can go away from the app and then feel that top of the screen there and get an update on the ETA, the vehicle, things like that. But quite frankly, if I didn't have the dynamic island, I don't know that I would miss it all that much. But for those who care about it, just know that the 15 Pro does, I mean, that the 16E does not have the dynamic island. It just has the standard notch, like what you found on the iPhone 14 or the earlier phones that didn't have the dynamic island. And of course, as I mentioned, the fewer color options, only black and white. So for those who care about those kinds of cosmetic things, that's something to know about. So in conclusion, I would say that this is a good phone for an SE replacement or just somebody who wants a really good, basic, but robust and reliable iPhone with good battery life and something that you know is going to be supported for at least 5 years moving forward from Apple. So it's a nice little phone, and if you're looking to replace an SE, I think it's a no-brainer. I have heard of some people who have even traded in their iPhone 15 Pros to get this 16e because they like it that much. I'm not one of them. I'm very happy with my 15 Pro, and I don't see anything that I would gain from the 16e other than maybe slightly better battery life. But I'm going to stick with what I've got. But there are some people who have gone as far as to do that kind of trade. So that's my little spiel on the phone. I'll open the floor now to anybody with questions, comments. Remember, you can raise your hand or say your name, and then I will try to alternate
This is
between them.
Andy.
So, Andy, go ahead.
Okay, Mary Lou and I got the 16Es shortly after my birthday, which was like about the beginning, maybe first or second week of April, and I like it very much. I have to say that the first day or two was trying. I began to wonder if I did the right thing, and what we did is we went to T-Mobile, which is our carrier, and they had a trade-in, $150. We traded in our SE3s, and so the phone ended up costing like about $450. The girl from T-Mobile was great. She spent a lot of time with us, but when she turned on VoiceOver on my phone, she couldn't get the swipe up gestures to work, for the to go to the home screen or to go to the app switcher. And she says, "Oh my God, if you use accessibility, you're not going to be able to use the phone." And thing is, I knew that I would be able to. I've read, a lot of posts on lists and things like that about, whatnot. And she says, "Oh, you got to take it to the Apple store." And I said, "Just give me the phone." I says, "You," because and then there was also a thing where she had it in a different line. I think she had it speaking French, but when we, as soon as she got it speaking English, I said, "Just give me the phone." I says, "Don't worry about it. I'll figure it out." And it took. I did figure it out, but it took me a while. And it's kind of like a motor skill that once you learn it, you don't even think about it. It's kind of like, tying your shoes. Like you don't think about, tying your shoes, you just do it. And
Right.
within a day or so, I was able to do it without any problem. The Face ID, I did have a sighted person help me set up the Face ID because it kept telling me my face was out of view. But I got that set up. It works most of the time, not all the time, but it works most of the time. I really love the battery life. I know in the last few phones that I had, I always had a charging case, that had a battery built into the case. But I figured, well, I'll try this out because, people were telling me that the battery life is so great. And I figured, well, I'll try it out, without that. So I just got a very simple case, and I haven't found any need to have a charging case. The battery, I don't use my phone probably as much as other people do, and I get, I get a few days out of a charge, and also it charges a lot faster. Of course, they give you the cable, but they don't give you a charger. I bought a wall charger, and I would say it goes from maybe 25% to 100% in a little over an hour just using the wall charger. And
Right.
as far as the MagSafe, now I was told, I don't, I may be wrong, but I mean, I was told that you can buy cases that have the MagSafe. And that you could use MagSafe that way. I have not done that, but at least that's what I was told.
Well, here's the thing about that. Yes, you can get cases that'll mimic MagSafe in terms of how the magnets stick. but it will not charge the phone faster, which is part of what MagSafe was doing. So that faster wireless charging was only available through MagSafe. So it'll still work. And briefly, just to comment on the earlier part of your message, the only useful tip that that T-Mobile employee gave you was to go to the Apple Store. And this is why I'm constantly harping on this to people, is that if you buy your phone from your carrier because maybe they give you better deals on trade-ins or the cost of it, which is perfectly fine and understandable, that doesn't mean that you have to rely on them to help you with support. Because chances are, unless you get really lucky, the person who works at the carrier store has to know a little bit of something about all the phones they sell. They don't just sell one brand. So at Apple, on the other hand, you get somebody who is much better versed in their product because all they sell is Apple stuff. So sometimes I say buy the phone through the carrier and then go to Apple if you want them to help you set it up or do anything like that, because they're just going to be much more better versed with their product than the person at the carrier store. So it's just something to keep in mind about that. But it sounds like you got it figured out. And as far as the gesture for replicating the home button, yeah, if you're not familiar with that, if you've never used it, it can seem a little daunting at first, but your experience is similar to mine and countless others that I've heard as well, that it takes a day or two, it feels weird, but then once you learn it, it becomes kind of intuitive. And in fact, when I have to go back and work on phones for clients who are still using SEs, it's a little weird to me now to have to remember to have to press the home button twice to get that app switcher and do things like that. So it's just one of those things. It's muscle memory, but for most people, it doesn't take long and it becomes very intuitive. So thanks for that, Andy. Appreciate all that. That I'm sure that was very helpful to people. Does anybody else have any comments, questions? Do we have any
Robert.
hand? Wait, hold on. Referring it to
Yep.
you, Robert. Do we have any hands raised? No hands raised. Okay, go ahead, Robert.
Okay, so I upgraded Joyce to remind him. So I upgraded Joyce 13 mini to the 16E for many different reasons. I didn't have any problems upgrading it, which I didn't think I would. Like, I did my own phone similarly, where transferring the eSIM over and all that stuff was very simple. I ran into a couple of snags after getting her phone set up, and I thought I just wanted to like make these points known publicly in case you come across this or anyone comes across this for future reference and you know someone. So Joy uses the Dexcom T6 for her glucose monitoring, and she uses the Tandem Mobi insulin pump. And so the first point I wanted to make is that with the battery life of the 16E, it is pretty good. However, because of both of those apps being actively in the background 24/7, the battery is not much more, at least on her 16E, isn't much more different from her 13 mini. So she's still charging it at least once a day during the day, because she runs, it goes down from 100 down to maybe 20 or so before the end of the day. And that's just because she got some pretty powerful apps that are running in the background. But the big point I want to make, and this is something I just wanted to point out to people, I spent a lot of time on the phone going back and forth between these two apps companies and getting everything set up. I learned the hard way that when upgrading a phone with both of these apps, that if you have backed up your phone to iCloud, that especially the Tandem Mobi does not play nicely with iCloud backups. So it took me a while to learn. I had to delete, once everything was backed up or installed, delete the app from the phone, go back to the App Store, download it, and activate it, logging in, all that kind of stuff. Otherwise, it will sit there and it just looks like it's trying to do its thing, and it will never actually log in. So,
Took me a long time to actually get someone to tell me that I had to delete the apps, reinstall them, and log back in again. So I just wanted to make that point when upgrading, it's not just with the 16e, it's actually with any iPhone. You have a backup, iCloud backup with these two apps, you have to delete them and reinstall them and then log in again. And the other thing that I didn't know about that I do now know is I have to turn the pump off and disconnect it from the old phone before turning that off and starting to install the new phone. So little things I learned, I just wanted to let everybody know in case you come across that in the future.
Good boy, yes.
Oh yeah, what fun
Sounds
it
like
was.
quite a hassle. Just out of curiosity, when you were setting up the phone, did you do a phone-to-phone transfer, or did you do a restore from an iCloud backup?
I'll tell you.
Yeah.
The
Me
apps I
too.
did the iCloud
I'm
backup,
muted
but
now.
wait, if somebody's talking over Robert, okay, please, everybody, again, don't unmute till it's time. So, go ahead, Robert. Where's the answer?
So the sim the original install I did the iPhone to iPhone, and it just recognized it from the 13 mini and just started doing its thing. So I didn't have to do much of anything.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as like when you first started, it gives you an option to set up as a new phone, set it up from an existing phone, or set it up from an
Oh
iCloud
yeah,
backup.
I did a from an existing phone.
Okay, yeah, that's the best way to do it. But in this case, yeah, this is kind of the thing with these specialized medical apps, and this is why I
Oh
always tell
yeah.
people, before you do anything like this, make sure that, of course, your hardware is going to be supported by the new phone. I know you did that. You put a lot of time and effort into that, but I'm just putting this out there for other people who may be listening and thinking about doing this, is that it pays to do this research. And
And the other thing that it does pay to do, and the nice thing about some of these newer phones now is that if people don't realize it, you have an app on your phone called Passwords. And you can actually go in there and actually look at the passwords you've created if you've forgotten them. But it is really good to store them in the Passwords app because, when you go 2, 3 years later trying to upgrade a phone, it's like, what was that password again? And now because you can't remember it, you've got to go do a forgot password and do all those things. So
oh,
it's,
yeah.
it's really good to either write your passwords down or to keep them in the passwords key and passwords app. So just some
Yeah.
good tidbits.
Yeah, this serves as a good reminder that maybe we ought to do another meeting again on password managers, because it's been a while since we visited that subject. But yeah, password managers, whether it be the one included with your device or third-party ones like Bitwarden and 1Password and such, in today's world are absolutely indispensable. And they make things like this easier, and also, if you use them properly, makes you a lot more secure and less likely to fall prey to a hack attack of some kind. I also thank you for reminding me, because I didn't touch on this, but yeah, that's one other difference between the 16e and the iPhone SE phones, is that the 16e no longer supports physical SIM cards. It's eSIM or nothing. This started a little while back. I think the 14 was the first one that forced everybody into that here. But as time has gone on, Apple's moved more and more into that. And now with the 16e, that pretty much solidifies that anything that's current in their line of phones only supports eSIM, no more physical SIM. So if you're using an SE with a physical SIM card, that's going to be part of your process, is converting it over to an eSIM, which is fairly painless, at least in my opinion it was. But it is something to be prepared for, because it is one of the things you'll have to do. So thank you for all that info, Robert. Do we have anybody else with any questions? Mary Lou, you had your hand raised. And now you can go ahead and unmute yourself. Hello, Mary Lou. Let's see. She may be having trouble unmuting, because I think she's been
There. Can you hear
There we
me?
go. We got you. We got you.
Okay, great. Can you hear me now?
We hear you.
Okay, great. I had to go to the Apple store, and then what I noticed, because they screwed me, they did some things to me that I didn't like when I got a new iPhone at the T-Mobile. And I noticed when I turned on my new iPhone that it said I was paired up with my iPad. And I thought, okay, that's not too bad. And then as I went along, I'm thinking there are sometimes when I'm deleting emails, okay, that's good. But that's not so good if I want to make folders and I want to delete some stuff out of my iPhone, but I don't want to delete it out of the iPad. So how do I? There must be some way to go into the settings or whatever, and I want to write it down so I know where to go and how I can go in and out and use it when I want it.
Okay, so I will say that yes, I believe this is doable. I don't have it off the top of my head how to do it. If anybody here happens to know at least the direction to point her in, let yourself be known now. And if not, then I'm going to recommend that maybe we use our good friend Google here. And just go in and type in, how to keep my iPad and iPhone from syncing with each other or something to that effect. I'm sure there's a setting in there, probably under handoff or things like that. It sounds kind of like the
Okay.
direction. So that's kind of where you want to look. But I believe it is something that's doable. And if nothing else, call Apple Accessibility.
Okay.
They have a phone number and call them. And I think they can actually even remote into your device and maybe help you. So,
Okay, I think, I mean, I'm wondering, it just seems like you could go into settings and they could turn it on and off, and I'm guessing, because I
right.
don't.
So that's what I'm saying is that there are ways to go in setting and do it. I just don't happen to have it memorized off the top of my head because
Yeah.
obviously, if I had that kind of brain,
Yeah,
yeah.
but I
But
cannot. I'm only guessing at this.
what I'm giving you are tips that I things that I would do if I was in your shoes at
Okay.
this very moment. I would go to Google and do some searching. I would call Apple Accessibility and do some searching. I might go into Apple Viz and put out a query or go on one of the iPhone mailing lists like VIPhone and or Blind Apples, one of those lists that exists.
Okay.
I know Andy's on some of those lists, so maybe he could put the question out there on your behalf. So that would be my recommendation since right
But
off
I
the
want the
top,
ability.
right off the bat, that's the only advice I can give you.
Okay. But I thought, hey, at first I thought this is kind of neat. I'll delete it. I don't have to go like at two computers and keep deleting from one to the other. And I thought, oh, this is neat. But then as I got into it, I thought, thinking, I'd like, as I was doing in the beginning, I was taking cookbooks and I put it on the iPad and I was doing certain things and I thought,
Right. So here's the thing with the syncing, there's good things that come from it, but also there's bad things that come with it. And
Yeah.
it is just a matter of deciding which is going to be more helpful to you or and at what cost. So go give some of those suggestions a try and hopefully we can get your things decoupled there and let them exist separately with different looks to them. I'm sure that should be doable. So thank you for that, Mary Lou.
Okay, sure.
All righty. And
Oh,
then
and also,
if you can go ahead and mute yourself now, because I
okay, I
want to keep
just
them.
want to say to a low vision that the quality picture quality for TV and other things is very good, and sound quality is excellent on the 16.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's good. You can touch on that area. So you find that the screen on the 16E was easier for you as a low vision person to see
Yeah,
things?
and I've
Cool.
taken pictures and as well, it's very clear, the clarity and also picture quality. I've taken pictures as well as watching TV and other things, even getting emails are very clear and very good.
And I bet that what phone did you have before the
I
SE?
had the 10SE. So it's like night and day.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a much bigger screen, more active screen, so you can
Yeah.
see things bigger. That's cool. That's good to know.
Sound quality is excellent.
It is. It's
It's
amazing.
almost like two speakers or so.
Yeah, it sounds really nice.
Yeah.
I was very impressed with it.
Me too.
All right, thanks, Mary Lou, and
Sure.
really helpful info there. If you can go ahead and mute yourself back.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody else with any questions, comments, or anything about the iPhone 16e?
Yeah, Tom Lang here.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
So I assume, whoops.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Lot of chatter here. I s assumed if you use a wired headset with the 16, you got to, there it needs a headphone with a USB, I mean a USB-C.
Yes.
Okay. And
Yeah, it's
those are widely available.
yes, or you can get adapters. I'm currently using a headset, for example, that's meant for desktops. It has a USB-A plug on it, so I have something that converts USB-A to USB-C, and I plug it into the iPhone, and it works.
Good. Now, I'm with Spectrum Mobile, and so I've been thinking about upgrading to some flavor of 16, but I'm not sure which. The 16E sounds good. I'm wondering about whether it would be easier to go through Apple to do that, or whether I should go to a Spectrum store.
I would always say Apple first, but it's possible that Spectrum might be giving you a better deal. Especially, they'll do that a lot of times with Intro, especially if you're just joining one of their plans, or they'll let you do some trade-ins that maybe Apple isn't doing. So, check to see which is going to be the better value financially for you. And if it turns out that they're both the same, the cost out of pocket's going to be the same, then all things being equal, I would go to the Apple store.
Okay. Now the next question is kind of weird. For a long time, but probably since last December, I've noticed that when I go to things like mail or different apps, sometimes when I double tap on things, audio will start to play, like from the music app or from YouTube or the Snap.
So just to be clear, when you two-finger double tap or when you single-finger double tap?
Yeah, it's acting like it. Yeah, it's single finger double tap.
And it's triggering things to play?
Yeah.
Are you absolutely sure that another finger isn't also touching the screen at the same time?
Pretty sure.
Because, yeah, because I know that can happen sometimes. If you keep your fingers close together and you think that it's just the one that's touching, if just enough of the other one is touching, and especially now with these phones with fuller screens like the 16 phones,
Yeah.
if you come from phones that had the big chin and bezels that I talked about earlier, you may possibly not have had this problem before, where maybe your finger was on the edge of it holding the phone and it wasn't a problem, where now it could be creating a problem because if just enough of that finger touches the active screen at the same time, it could be confusing your gestures.
Yeah, I've got a 12 Pro, so.
Yeah, so then you're used to that for a while.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Now, the other thing is I'm currently using eSIM. So
Right.
if I go through Apple, for example, and get the phone through them, is that going to be a problem as far as getting my eSIM transferred?
No, it shouldn't, because that's all part of the transfer process when you're transferring from one phone to the other. And especially if you do a phone-to-phone transfer, like what I was recommending earlier with Robert, that's your best transfer right there, because that sends over everything. Your screens are identical to how they were on the other device, and the eSIM process is part of that whole thing. and you just follow the prompts and the eSIM gets transferred.
Nice.
So yeah, good luck with that. So yeah, there's good options out there. It just depends on what you want. If the compromises that I mentioned are things you can live with, then I think the 16E is a really good value because it's $200 less. So think about it. You could take the $200 that you would spend toward the standard 16, and now you could maybe upgrade your memory, your storage, and go from 128 to like 512 or something like that.
Yeah,
So,
I've got 256 now.
yeah.
So if I could, do five, and I'm using 180 gigs. I've got, like 300 plus apps.
Right. So you might think about going to the next level up. So that's another thing that you'd get with the 16E is that, for the price that you would pay for a standard 16 with only 128 gigs, you can get yourself a 256 or higher, because I think they go to 512, if I'm not mistaken. So you can get a 512 16E for about the same price.
Sounds good.
So that
Yeah.
might be the thing to do.
Yeah. And I wouldn't see an appreciable difference in terms of OCR and, all that
Nope.
other stuff that I typically do.
Nope. It all works the same. We've tested it here with my 15 Pro and her 16E, and there's no appreciable difference.
What about LiDAR?
It does not have LiDAR, but it's funny. One of the reasons I got the 15 Pro is I thought, well, maybe I should start playing with LiDAR. And honestly, I have not found a use case for it for me. And now that I'm really getting into the glasses and the wearables, moving forward, I mean, that's how I want to interact with the world and for finding things is that as opposed to having to take out the phone and unlock it and get open an app, hit a button for this and that. It's like with the glasses, it's like I'm getting a lot done, and sooner or later, they'll upgrade those glasses, and I wouldn't be surprised if someday they come up with glasses with LiDAR.
Yeah, I've found that to be the case too. I really like the Ray-Bans.
So, for me anyway, I wouldn't, if I had to buy a phone today, I wouldn't buy a Pro phone just because of LiDAR. So,
Okay.
alrighty.
Very
Well,
good.
thanks for that and good luck.
Thank you.
Alrighty. All right. I think we'll go ahead and end the 16E discussion here so I can spend the next hour or so talking about the next thing, the GPS situation. But before doing so, I just want to give a brief mention here of the stuff that I do in case it could be helpful to somebody. We've talked about a lot of scenarios of needing help setting up phones, needing help maybe which phone do I get or what do I do if the person in the store doesn't know all the things that I need them to know about accessibility, things like that. Among the services that I offer is that. So, I basically I can offer as a consultation help you shop for tech if you need to talk to somebody about your needs and things like that on a personal level. That's a service that I provide. If you need training, I can certainly provide that for individuals or even small groups. So if you just want to get a little bit better with your mobile tech, it's a service that I provide. If you need tech support, somebody to help you better understand your tech or help you set it up and things like that. Like lately, I've been doing a lot of calls for people helping them set up those Meta glasses. Those are all the services that I provide. I also provide coaching. So if you're a trainer, for example, and maybe you might want to discuss some scenarios and maybe to help you become a better trainer. Those are again part of the services that I provide. I can be reached at www.techjv.com, which is my website. There you find my email address and phone number, but I'll go ahead and give them out here as well. My email is help@techjv.com. That's HELP at TECH, J as in John, V as in Victor .com. Or my phone number if you want to do it that way, 818-794 9554. And be happy to help you set up a session and let's see what we can help you do. Now that we're done with my little commercial here, we can go on to the next subject of discussion, which is blind and low vision GPS options. I just want to emphasize here that these are my own personal opinions, so I don't speak for anybody, but I know that I'm not the only one who feels this way. But in this instance, I'm speaking for myself. And if I speak for you too, then let that be known. So I'm going to be focusing, of course, on GPS navigation solutions for modern mobile devices. So mainly, Android phones, iPhones, etc. I know that they have standalone devices like the Victor, Trex, and things like that. But that's just an additional piece of hardware that you have to carry. And it's not to knock that, it's a good solution. But I personally prefer to use the phone that I already carry with me to do these things. So that's why I'm focusing my views on that. Despite many advances in blind and low vision technology, we have AI-aided stuff, we have smart glasses, we're getting into all this stuff, mobility aids now, we walk canes and other mobility things, which at some point I may want to try to have those people on here as well. We've got all this innovation happening, but one area that I think has been stagnant to almost regressed would have to be orientational options for GPS navigation. There are, of course, we all know Google Maps and Apple Maps and things like that. Those are your mainstream GPS apps that are out there, and they do a really good job. A lot of people use them every day for turn-by-turn guidance and things like that. But in my opinion, I don't think they do nearly as well at giving us information that we need to be better oriented to where we are or where we are going. So, I'm going to define at least what how I define give you how I define orientational GPS. It's something that provides timely and orientation information about where I currently happen to be. Things like the street that I'm on and direction of travel, what intersections I am approaching and the type of intersection that it is, it's a four-way, is it only a T intersection, is it a three-way, that kind of thing. I like to know that as I'm out and about on foot or even in a vehicle approaching intersections. Nearby landmarks, transit stops, and just in general points of interest. I want to be able to have access to that where I happen to be at the moment, and not necessarily just because I want to set up a route to get to them. I think it should also allow virtual travel and the ability to virtually explore any area that I virtually travel to. That has helped me many times when I'm going to go somewhere that I haven't been to before. I like that I can virtually travel there and virtually explore it and get the layout or at least enough information to know what I'm getting into. So, in other words, this all comes down to the kind of info that is generally shown on a map. The average sighted person can look at their screen of their Apple Map or Google Map and see all this kind of stuff. Where they're located is represented by a dot. And then they can see all the lines that represent the streets. They can see all the little points of interest. They can see all this info on their screen. But we, as blind and low vision users, cannot easily see the screen to get this info. So this is why we need specialized orientational GPS apps. It also really helps to have onboard maps instead of only relying on server-based maps, because you don't always have good internet connection in places that you go, or some places you go to, and it's so darn congested that it could just slow down the performance. And if you're in a moving vehicle, especially, and you're trying to keep track of what street you're coming out to, maybe you're on the bus and you want to make sure you don't miss your stop. You want something that can query a database quickly, and that's not always the case with server-based options. And we used to have a lot of good options out there, and some of you will probably remember some of these names I'm about to call off. Sendero GPS on the note takers had onboard maps and a lot of really useful tools. Back in the Symbian days, we had something called Wavefinder GPS and Lodestone, and Lodestone actually had onboard data, map data that you can download to it. So again, you can use it, and that was primarily and only a an orientational app. It didn't do turn by turn at all. Mobile Geo on Windows Mobile. Anybody use that one? I did, and I thought it was great. It was like having Sendero GPS on a phone, so I didn't need to carry a note taker to have access to it. And of course, my favorite of all, Nearby Explorer, which started on Android and eventually was brought over to iOS, and it has onboard maps. So again, this is what I'm talking about. You don't need to rely on a server to tell the app where it is and to then give you information about what's around you. Nearby Explorer also eventually had an online version, which was free. Because it since they didn't so you didn't have to buy a map, they actually made that available for free, and you could download OpenStreetMaps to it. So it was a fun thing. But those things have been done away with, unfortunately. And those of us that are still lucky enough to have it on our phones, and by the grace of God, still works. Although who knows what happens when iOS gets updated shortly, if it'll break. Are still able to take advantage of this, but this is not something that anybody today can have access to. We currently do have some good options. For example, Blind Square on iOS. We have Lazario GPS on iOS and Android. Good Maps Outdoors, which used to be the old Seeing Eye GPS from Sendero. That's still out there, and it's free now, so that's one good thing about it. There's something called Voice Vista, which is a port of the old Microsoft Soundscape. When Microsoft decided to abandon that or to do, get out of that app, one nice thing that they did is that they open sourced it and they published the source code and everything that somebody needed to continue its development. And Voice Vista was just one of those forks that was built and still being developed to this day. There's other lesser known options out there, especially in Android, that are, you know, open source and that people are constantly doing experiments with. But nothing really touches some of the stuff that comes with the previous apps that I mentioned. So, and none of them, to the best of my knowledge, have access to onboard map data. So it's all server based. So again, that's great if you have good internet connection. And even when you do, it only queries the base only so much. And not frequently enough, in my opinion. So you can end up missing streets if you're in a moving vehicle. Now I'm going to talk about why I feel that Nearby Explorer was a superior option on modern mobile devices. It was highly customizable and versatile. It's very similar to Sendero GPS on note takers and Mobile Geo was on Windows Mobile. From the main screen, you could easily enable or disable things that the app was calling out automatically without having to go into menus or do anything like that. So again, highly customizable and versatile. It came with onboard maps from Navtech and also had the option later to download OpenStreetMaps as well. So you could have both sets of maps in the app and choose whichever one worked better for you at the time. And it also had access to Google and Apple Maps, as well as Foursquare, the database, which came in really handy for precise address and points of interest finding. It also had a powerful tool called GeoBeam, which you could point the phone in any direction, and it was almost like as if you could have X-ray vision and look all the way down that line and see anything that was in that line that was between your phone and a certain distance away, so you can get information about nearby streets or points of interest or things like that, just standing somewhere. I liked the Nearby Explorer so much that yeah, obviously when it was came out on Android, I bought it. And then when they brought it to iOS, I participated in the beta testing of it. And when they stopped the beta and they released it to the general public, I, without hesitation, bought it because I already knew what a good app it was for my using it on Android. Unfortunately, a GPS, I mean APH, the American Printing House, decided to spin it off to Good Maps, and that's where development of Nearby Explorer pretty much stopped. And Good Maps, instead of picking that up, just chose to adopt the old Seeing Eye GPS and called it Good Maps Outdoors. And to this day, that's the outdoor map solution that they currently support. In my personal opinion, and again, my personal opinion, this was a huge mistake. I think they should have continued to develop Nearby Explorer because it was far superior. It had a lot more to offer. And yes, the Good Maps Outdoors, some say that it's a simpler interface, so maybe that was helpful to certain people. But I don't think it's nearly as powerful. Even to this day, I still use Nearby Explorer on my iPhone because it still works. Even with the old outdated maps, it's still a better solution to me for the way that I travel compared to things like Good Maps Outdoors. I play with it every now and then just to see what's happening with it, but quickly end up going back to Nearby Explorer because it just does what I need the best. This essentially left a large void that needs to be filled. So I'm using this platform to put a call out there, and maybe some of you will join me in this call, that Nearby Explorer needs to be revived or emulated. We need that. We need something like that back in our hands. Maybe they can do something similar that was done with the old soundscapes, like I mentioned earlier. Microsoft decided they didn't want to do that anymore, and they open sourced it, and then others came along and picked up that source code. And to this day, it is still quite a viable solution out there for those who prefer its method of orientating you to stuff or orienting you to stuff. So, somebody please pick up that ball. Good Maps, if you're listening, please reconsider your decision. Somebody, AI tools are nice, and all these things that are in the works are, I think, are going to be wonderful tools. But I think we still need a solution out there that helps us break travel barriers. And yes, I would absolutely be willing to pay for it. I understand that maps are not free, and app development isn't free. And I would happily keep paying for something like Nearby Explorer because I use it a lot. So now that I'm stepping off the soapbox here, I'm going to open up the floor, and I'd like to hear what maybe some of you are using for apps. Especially, I'm especially interested to hear from somebody who was using Nearby Explorer and has moved on to something else. I want to know what you're using, and if you can get anywhere near the same functionality that we were getting with Nearby Explorer, or Sendero GPS, or things like that, that were really powerful GPS and orientation travel tools for the blind and low vision. So, anybody from the floor? I hear somebody unmuted, so maybe I'm thinking somebody might want to say something.
Yeah,
Nothing?
Tom here.
Yeah, Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you about Nearby Explorer. I still use it. Of course, I got rid of the offline version, but it works great. Works great, and I haven't found anything that even compares.
Yeah, I mean, the offline version was good for people who didn't want to pay the $99 or $89, whatever it was, for the full offline version, or the the one with the maps. So, it's a good option, but for me, other than just experimenting with it, I never really use the offline version much because I have the maps, and that is always going to be superior in performance to server-based maps. So, thank you for that, Tom. You're using Nearby, so and I'm glad it's working for you as it is for me. But gosh, what happens when the next iOS gets announced here shortly? Is that going to break it? It's like we have to cross our fingers and pray that we get another year of Nearby Explorer. Anybody else on the
This is
floor?
Andy.
Andy, go ahead.
Yeah, I still use Nearby Explorer. It works just fine. The only and I also use Blind Square, but sometimes I run into the issue that you were talking about, in that Blind Square is based on an internet connection, and sometimes you get into certain areas where you'll you know, it'll say it'll you get a pop-up, it'll say you lost your connection. Or sometimes it doesn't happen as much as it used to, but sometimes if we're traveling like really fast on the freeway, it'll say like, I can't keep something to the effect that they can't keep up, that I'm moving too fast. But the only thing about Nearby Explorer that I never liked is that the basic functions, it's fine to set up, but like if now I never I very seldom have occasion to do this, but like it's very difficult to set up a route. You can do it, but it's not intuitive. I always have to try to go back and read some documentation before I do it, because it's kind of difficult to do. Now, once you get the route set up, it works great. But to set it up, I noticed with the other apps, like the Sendero or whatnot, it was easier to do that.
I agree with that actually. It didn't bother me much because I seldomly rely on turn by turn directions. I know the places I live and go to often enough that I don't really need something telling me turn right here and go left there, that kind of thing. But I agree. I did try doing it several times in a vehicle to do a route, and I had the same experience. And that's one thing that I was hoping eventually would get addressed as the app developed. But unfortunately, now it's no longer being developed, so we're sort of frozen in time. So yeah, if I ever need turn by turn, I'm probably at this point gonna go with Good Maps Outdoors, because I did think that the interface for that was a little better and more intuitive. Anybody else?
Ever.
Ever? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wonder what you think of for traveling outdoors, Ira.
I have used Aira for traveling outdoors, mainly more for testing than anything else. It comes in handy, for example, if you're in a big shopping center with a big parking lot or something like that, and you want assistance finding that one business, where it could be hard to do if you're just kind of aimlessly walking around a big outdoor mall like that. But for me personally, I don't use that much. I much prefer something like a getting warmer type of instruction. And this is again one of the things that Nearby Explorer offers, is that I can look up a point of interest and I could set it up to where it automatically calls out its proximity to me and distance from me. So once I put focus on that, when I get close enough to the thing I'm looking for, I just start listening to it, and it guides me right in. It'll say, 300 feet at 2 o'clock, or 400 feet at 4 o'clock. When it tells me that, I know where to turn. The other app that I mentioned, Soundscapes, or the Voice Vista, which used to be Soundscapes, they do it a little bit differently. Where if, and this is really cool if you're wearing the Meta glasses, because you get stereo speakers with them, is that it's almost like it's a voice calling to you from the direction. Kind of like what we have at conventions where somebody's like, "General session over this way." that same kind of idea. So you listen for the voice in the direction and you move toward it. And that's what Voice Vista does. So some people like that way. Me personally, I prefer to get data, numbers and directions and things like that. So I don't use Aira much for that kind of outdoor travel.
Well, now that with the Meta glasses, I find it to be very helpful. For an example, yesterday I was out. And I went to three locations, all on the same street, Sunset. However, it meant crossing two streets and like a four lane highway. I just found that I needed that kind of help from Aira, and of course it uses the AI. And so I just why I wanted to know if, what your experience was.
Yeah, but you were it was a human helping you, right?
Yes.
Okay, so it wasn't an AI. But I think if I had to do that kind of thing and I was in a totally unfamiliar area and I was looking at big crossings like that, especially if the streets curve or do funny things like that, Then I might do that. I have with the Meta glasses, now that I think about it, I have used it once or twice on a certain crossing around here that's at an angle, and
Right.
you're literally like threading the needle between two busy roadways on
Yeah,
either
and
side of you.
that's why I thought it was very helpful because I would have felt inadequate to cross into, without some help like that. So
And it worked very well, I have to say. So yeah,
yeah.
that's definitely a good tool in that situation.
And it was free now using the AI. So yeah.
Oh, for the training, yeah. Because what you're doing is you're helping to train their AI model
Right,
to
exactly.
someday be able to help us.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool. Well, thanks for that. Anybody else with info on GPS, especially something that you're finding that works? No, no hands raised. All righty. Well, I hope that those of you listening to this here live, as well as later in the podcast, will be inspired to join me in making a call or just putting it out there. We need a powerful GPS navigation tool, especially to help us with orientation and travel. And something like Nearby Explorer just did it so well. And I keep hearing talk of someday AI will be able to do this. And maybe it will, but for the time being, I think we need a solution that worked like Nearby Explorer did. And who knows, as it develops, it could become infused or aided by AI in the future. I'm certainly not opposed to it, but I think we need something like that. And hopefully somebody out there, the bug will land in somebody's ear, and maybe somebody could either revive Nearby Explorer or at least find out how to emulate a lot of the function of Nearby Explorer and put it out there. Because I think there's enough of us that would be happy to pay for it and help in its development, because it's a powerful travel tool that we're going to need as time goes on, and eventually Nearby Explorer is gonna stop working. It's only a matter of time. So, let's put that message out there, and let's hope that someday we get a good GPS tool that we can rely on again to help us with this. So, I want to thank all of you who took time out of your day to come join me here in this discussion, as well as those of you who are going to listen to us later at home and wherever you happen to be. Really appreciate that. You listen to us, and that you gain something from what we're having. I just want to put it out here as well that we always welcome suggestions for future topics or guest speakers, things like that. And I've always said that I'd like to talk about other things that are not so tech related, because I know that not everybody breaks barriers with tech only. Some people use really clever and creative non-tech solutions out there, and I'd love to have discussions about this. So I welcome suggestions, ideas, or people
Ever?
who ever go ahead.
Yes, I have had a lot of people ask, can we ever get some help in using the calendar? So that's a topic I think.
I'm sorry, using the what?
Using the calendar.
The calendar?
Yes. There's a lot of people who feel that on the phone, on
Oh,
the
okay, on
iPhone, the calendar
the phone.
is difficult. I've had several people call me, so.
So, have you gotten good at using the calendar?
I'm not great, but I use it.
Or do you know of anybody who's really good at using the calendar? Because
I do
that's
not. Nobody.
I would love to have somebody on to help with that.
Oh, okay.
I use it very minimally. In a very basic way. And I know that there's people out there probably doing far more complex things with it. So I'd love to get that conversation started. So if you ever come across anybody who's good at that, who's found some good tips and tricks and wouldn't mind sharing them with us, I'd like to be in touch with them.
Well, great. I will do a little research on that because I would love to get some additional help myself. Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. So, yeah, anybody listening there, again, I welcome suggestions, ideas, or if you yourself want to come join us and talk about something that has been really helpful to you in smashing barriers that get in the way of us living full and independent lives that we want to live. I want to hear from you. So again, my name is Julian Vargas. My email address is help, the word help, HELP, at techjv.com, HELP at TECH, J as in John, V as in Victor.com. Get a hold of me there. Remember that you can listen to us all over the place on podcast platforms, on your smart speakers, on your digital book reader devices like your Victor Streams and your Sense Players. They all have podcast ability, and you can search for Breaking Blindness Barriers and listen to us there. And yeah, so that'll be it. I look forward to the next meeting, and of course, I will send that info out when it's going to happen. But in the meantime, remember to keep on breaking those blindness or whatever kind of barriers are getting in the way of living the life that you want to live. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.